As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit then.
Plus minus.
Driving again. Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. Do you hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think you got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. Tim Kawakami in the building, and we made a trade at the deadline.
A needed, urgent, important trade. I'm surprised that the other team was willing to make this move, but
it's like a win now and for the future, right?
And I get off a lot of money too. It was a really necessary move.
Marcus Thompson is out. I don't know where we sent him. Y'all can be creative. Zena Kata is in. How are you?
I'm well. I'm doing well. I like this analogy, especially the moving money off the roster. That is very true.
Yeah, wait a minute.
I'm a much more affordable. Yeah, I'm a much more affordable talent.
We need to see if we can get that max contract available to Zena.
Well, still on the rookie deal, extension eligibility.
Exactly. Exactly. I got to prove my worth, right?
It is trade deadline week, which I'm sure we'll get into. And it's coming at an interesting time because, the Warriors went 2-2 on a homestand. It's not time to just, declare, wow, the ship has turned around. But it does feel like the most sustainable moment of the season, with Draymond back looking good, playing a bunch of minutes very quickly. He had 46 minutes in that double overtime game. Rick Celebrini, I'm sure, was over there just breaking clipboards. But he's a center, which seems like it's now, it's a team that was searching for an identity. To me, that seems to be the identity. He's a center. Wiggins Kuminga's working. This team seems to have a little bit of juice right now, right before the deadline.
Yeah, if they're going to be good this season, this is how they're going to be good. And it's still if, there could be other things that happen. A lot has happened this season. And, 38 games left to go. There's certainly enough season for them to get back into some kind of, reasonable contention. There's enough time for them to go through some more problems. We've seen them kind of make some changes, back to the old way, little changes. But this seems like pretty much of a commitment. And I think, Draymond at center is the thing that kind of unlocks a lot of other things. His patience now, he certainly seems like he's playing with more patience. His mindset is clearer. And, this full board commitment to Draymond, Wiggins, and Kuminga is the way they have to play. They've got to it now. We'll see how it lasts and see if it gets even better. But this is the way they have to do it. Again, I don't know what the top end of this, but it's a lot higher than what we saw for the first 42 games.
And the consistency, right? In the first 42 games, just having no consistency in that starting lineup. Just like you said, Tim, Draymond, Kuminga, and Wiggins are probably the most exciting thing that you're starting to see in the consistency of that starting lineup. And knowing that they're elevating their play in that starting lineup, Moody's not even back. GP2's not even back.
So Chris Paul.
Chris Paul's not back, yeah. Right, exactly. So now you're starting to see more so of a optimistic outlook on their season versus this ship is crashing and we don't know where it's going. So it seems like they're starting to formalize their identity, as you mentioned, get some consistency. And now there's like, okay, once we get everyone back on board, maybe we can turn this around.
So much of it clearly, and this is being reinforced, is about Draymond and just being there. And if you line up potential concerns the rest of the season, that to me still kind of is at the top of the list. Like, stay eligible. Stay eligible, because if he's not eligible, they're tanking. You know, not, I don't mean like, you know, actively attempting to tank.
Aggregate that. Slater said they're tanking.
And, you know, he's played 20 games. What did you say? They played 44, only 20 of the 44 games. And what is he? He's plus 79 the last like four games, something like that.
Well, this is like when people ask, why do the Warriors do this with Draymond? Mm-hmm. Why have they let him do all these things? Why don't haven't they got rid of him? And I, hey, listen, at times I've said maybe they should start thinking about it. I wrote that after his, this last suspension. But this is why they stick with him. This is why they gave him the contract this offseason. This is why they wait for him. Because he can play like this. Because
he's their second best player.
He's the second best player. He's their best center. Has been their best center for a long time. It's not as just pipe in a 7-footer and everything's going to be. No, this is their best way they play. Now, they need other stuff around it. It's, I thought it was very interesting. Draymond, as always, you know, he's so interesting in the post game. He talked about how when, you know, he and Steph and Clay were younger, they were, you know, they helped carry some older guys. You know, I think we know Sean Livingston, or we can Andrew Bogut, David Lee. We know the veterans' names that they really respected. Now it's time maybe for some younger guys beneath them, Kuminga being the number one, to help carry them. That's a pretty large thing to say for somebody with so much pride, who's accomplished so much, who's not that old. But it's a very – I think there's a shift. I think a shift happened. I'm writing about it for later today. Kind of within the team consciousness, we know how this the dynastic group works and how Steve Kerr works with them, that this is like, okay, they can't hold on to the same thing they've done this whole time. They can't. I asked Draymond about it. He said, you know, if you do the same thing for 10 years, teams are chasing you for 10 years, they're going to figure it out pretty soon, and you have to change. They kind of hit that moment. Maybe they hit that moment a little while ago, and it took them some time to sink in, but like they hit that. And now they've got to change some things. And Jonathan Kuminga is the change agent. He's the guy, not the only part of it, but the main one, that they got to alter some things to make sure they get Kuminga going, because he can help carry them. Not carry them himself, but help push this further than it was going to go without him.
I want to go back really quickly, because you guys mentioned Draymond being eligible being your like number one thing. And I want to ask, like, do you not see a change in his behavior, or do you see a change in his behavior since he's been back, as far as like interacting with refs and how he's taken to certain calls or anything like that?
Yeah.
Well, I see injuries being the number one issue for them.
Yeah. So I was sitting, they put us courtside in Memphis, which I'm about to go to Memphis for another game. And I love being courtside, because like you're literally in the game. I used to get it every game for when I was covering the Thunder, because that's like that in Oklahoma City. And that was his first game back, and he was like actively reserved in that game. You could tell, like, there was a fan behind the bench that was like, you know, saying like, send him to the asylum, you know, that type of stuff, you know, because he's going to face that, like, you're crazy type, you know, rhetoric. And he was like, you know, he kind of went a little bit back and forth, but it was in a friendly way. Or, you know, like, he had one foul that was like, it wasn't even borderline flagrant. It was just like a normal, like, semi hard foul, clear foul. And, you know, you had the bench like calling for the review, which you saw him the other day get mad at Vanderbilt for doing, and the crowd yelling like,
that was hilarious.
And he was like reserved. And I remember he took a charge, and like he like took a deep breath, like, I want to go after the rep. But then, the, you know, Steve Kerr got up to argue it, and it was like, okay, like, they're shifting who is doing the arguing. They're still protesting the call, but Draymond felt okay with it because somebody was speaking up on his behalf. There's a little of that I saw specifically that first night. And you know, he's mostly stayed away from referees at zero technicals in five games. But at the same time, y'all were at the Lakers game. He was like, there was a couple, you know, he had the hard foul on Davis. It wasn't anything over the top, like borderline, maybe you could say flagrant one. It wasn't nothing that would have been suspendable. But, you know, he had some stuff with Vanderbilt. He had some like pushing and shoving with D'Angelo Russell. And it was a reminder that like this guy kind of has to live that way on the basketball court. Mm-hmm. And where my concern is long term is like, if this team really is to make a run, They're going to have to win a lot of big games down the stretch.
Intense games. Yeah.
Just really intense environments. They have a bunch of ABC Saturday night, TNT Tuesdays. The NBA loves putting them on these marquee games late in the season, and they're going to have to win these games. And as we've seen with this team, they're not blowing anybody out. They're going to be in like tight fourth quarters. And then even if they get to the playoffs, like that's all the playoffs is. And my concern is like, he's going to be able to go through all of that without getting in the league's crosshairs. Like a playoff run means like four times that Draymond Green and the league are going at it. And the thing that I would be concerned about long-term, as you're asking, is the league has shown, like, so let's say Sabonis happens in game two last year, he gets game three suspended, you know, and that was even like at the time, like, will he or won't he get one game? That happens in game two of the first round this year, or game 71 of the regular season. What's the league doing?
A month. Yeah, he's out for a long time. And yeah, it's like, let's see. You have to say with this one, let's see, because the league is saying, let's see. He got an indefinite suspension. Like, this wasn't like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, here's six games. It was indefinite. You know, we didn't, and it turned out, what, 11 games? I don't exactly remember what number it was.
It was 12 and then four extra on the conditioning
schedule. Yeah, so, like, they do not like this. They've said the right things. They've said it's about him. I have heard other things from the league is really unhappy, you know, was unhappy with that scene. They showed it with suspension. So we'll see. You know, there are definitely signs. Like, Kuminga gets the tech last night, and Draymond is the one, I guess, he was playing him. Kuminga kind of said maybe Draymond was helping him, but Draymond is kind of like, calm it down. We don't get tossed. We don't need that. And I thought that was notable. You know, Draymond wasn't happy with some calls last night and, you know, did his slap the hands, whatever does the Draymond thing, but then stopped and ran back down court. This is just a small sample size. We have a very large sample size of it not working that way.
Tim is a believer after five games.
I'm just optimistic. It's all calm now. I am optimistic. I do feel as if I've seen some, particularly in that Lakers game. I mean, after he told Vanderbilt to shut his BA up, I was dying. I was like, there's Draymond coming out. There it is, creeping out. But there's been calls that I've been shocked that he has not been jumping down refs' throats. But he has been doing it in a way that's still authentic to him, I think. I'm not going to say it's like fixed. The situation is not fixed. I'm not saying that. But I feel like that's less of an issue in my mind as much as everything you just listed, Slater, as far as like the length of this season, if they make it to playoffs, I'm thinking about these guys are old. These guys are not young. Like, this is a long season. And you're talking about Draymond's back in the 30-minute range. Steph's been in the 30-minute range. CP3, before he went out, was in the 30-minute range. You know, obviously, when they're full force, you won't have everyone doing that sort of a load. But it's a really long season, and people keep getting injured. These rotations keep having to shift, and more people are picking up new minutes that they probably didn't have or could potentially not be conditioned for. That's my issue. Like, can you make it to the finish line?
Well, yeah, that's a fair question. I mean, like, yeah, listen, this is not the old Warriors was like, oh, listen, you know, we can take this section where we kind of decelerate because we've got this big lead, and really it doesn't matter if we're the 2 seed or the 3 seed. We're the Warriors. Right? Right. I mean, we can go win on the road. We've done it every single series. Well, they didn't do that in the Lakers series, but they can't do that this season. They can't. No. Like, they got to put the pedal down. And if they run out of gas, that happens to other teams. It didn't used to happen to the Warriors where they would risk that. Now they're putting the pedal down. They have to. They can't throw away games. So they've thrown away so many that they're just not in the span where, like, okay, listen, if we go a little 3-7 stretch here, which they've done. Right at the end, we've seen it happen towards the end of seasons where they were going to go for the 1 seed, now they're the 3 seed. They were going to be the 3 seed, now they're the 4 seed. That's not them. They've got to win. Yeah. I mean, if they go, you know, if they play great, what's their top side? Top side 6 seed, maybe like those teams are 26 point, and 21.
So, yeah, so I'll 20, just, 24. If you want to look at it, Timberwolves, Nuggets, Thunder, Clippers to me locked in as top four ahead of the Warriors, obviously. Suns trending that way, Kings trending that way. Those are two teams that could theoretically hit a slump. So maybe 5-6 is reachable, but to be honest, I think you're talking more 7 on the top end. That's where to me, it drops off, and then it's Dallas, New Orleans, Los Angeles, Utah, Houston. Like those,
you
are
need
the
those teams to come back to you. Now, listen, some of those teams are coming back to them.
By the way, the Lakers and the Jazz have 25 losses, and the Warriors have 24 losses.
That is
so they're actually
very interesting.
Yeah, but so, and this is a part of what y'all are talking about. The Warriors have played only 44 games right now, whereas the Lakers and Jazz have played 49. Some of that because they had two postponements, obviously recently. Some of it is because of just how the schedule, materialized this year. But they have a ton of they got two road back to backs coming up. They now have that extra Utah game before the All-Star break, where they're at Utah on Monday, back home on Wednesday, at Utah on Thursday. And like Steph Curry's played 41 games, they spotted him a game in Milwaukee and basically
And he's leading in clutch minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's not only that he's just played those games; he's been in clutch minutes in 30 plus of them. Like that's insane wear and tear. We can say this all day long. The storyline that Steph Curry takes care of his body is well ingrained in our heads, but that is still a different level of wear and tear.
He gets tired. He had a 3-week, 4-week stretch this season that he looked fatigued. Now they just had a 9-day layoff for very tragic reasons, but he has come back looking like, you know, the bodies look a little refreshed, but they're about to play a ton of games coming up and that does wear on him. Now where this, I do think this team, look, you lose Steph for any extended period. Clearly if you lose Draymond for any extended period, you're in trouble. But to me, like the more mid rotation players, like once healthy, they're pretty deep. You got Moody back in this rotation. You get Peyton, you get Paul, they're pretty deep. Now you were seeing last night where the depth is hurting. Looney's in a really bad place right now. It feels like on the court. Saric isn't playing that well. Corey Joseph's not doing anything.
Corey Joseph, do Warriors fans think that? I'm not sure about that.
I need to. We got to touch on this. We have to touch on this because I, as a person that covered him in the G, I was super super pumped to see Lester Quiñones get in the game.
Hit a three.
Yep.
Hit a corner three. Big three. There we go. But I am very confused as to why Lester, Corey, and even sometimes I think BP were on the court at the same time.
Well, like I was like, Kerr went top line, second line. He was going to keep
the group together.
Kuminga, Wiggins, and mostly Steph. Yeah, then
he
was
used
just
the term maximize. He wants to maximize that group's minutes, and particularly that front court group's minutes. Yeah.
Instead of kind of diffusing it out. And they were out, without Clay, GP2, Chris Paul, Moody. So, yeah, you can argue that. Like, there was a risky group out there. There was no question. Like, we all noticed. Like, you have Corey Joseph and Quiñones and, Saric out there all at the same time, whatever, however Kerr put it together. But you could just really tell. It was almost like a college thing. Like, you see college teams, like, we got our really good players, and we have our secondary players, so let's really try to make the really good players win. And then let's try to just hold the fort and not blend in the units. I hadn't really seen that. And the Warriors are usually deep enough where they don't have to do that. But no, that's like, we all like, wow, that was weird.
What's that term? There's a term, a substitution term for
hockey substitution.
Hockey shifts. That was like, there's a term for that. Just five in, five out, or like just like as your squadron coming in and out. I was like, this is very interesting. We'll see how this works. But I do agree that, obviously with GP2 out, Moody out particularly, and CP3 out, like, you need people out there to push the pace, which I think BP and Corey Joseph do a good job of in transition, trying to push the pace. I thought I kept seeing Lester kind of not know where he wanted to be once he filled his lane. And I felt like it's because in the G, he plays point. For Santa Cruz more so. And so, or he has played point for Santa Cruz more so. So I felt like he just kind of kept getting confused out there.
Well, yeah. And when those five have ever been on the court together?
Yeah, that too, right?
Like,
exactly.
Like, well, what are we supposed to do here? Like, usually there's Steph over there or there's Draymond over there. They're not here. What are we going to do?
They were not balancing.
Again, that's a very non-Kerr like stuff. Like, we are seeing different things. Could change again, right? Back to the, we've seen this. Kevon Looney could be back. How many times have we talked about that, Slater? Like, Kevon Looney comes out of the lineup, Kevon Looney goes back in the lineup.
Kevon Looney will have a 20 rebound playoff game.
Put it down. But I do think there's been, I'll say, organizational kind of principle of this or commitment. Like, they do have to change. Like they run it this long for as long as they could, and maybe a little bit longer than they should have. And now it's not wholesale. You still got Steph Curry. You still have to base everything on what's good for him. But I think Steph is kind of into this. Like I don't think Steph is against making some going a little more ISO ball. Kerr kind of mentioned when I asked him about, like, is it ISO ball? And he kind of mentioned Kuminga's defensive issues. Like, I'm just going to have to, like, live with those if he's really being productive on the other side. Right. Some of the tenets that we know this team has lived by and has won with and has really, really maximized Steph Curry just aren't in play anymore, and they're being altered. God, I don't want to give away my whole column. I'm going to stop talking right now because all the stuff's going to be in the column.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is what this first half of the season led them to, because there were so many little moments like Sacramento, for example, where Moses Moody hits three straight threes and then he pulls him for the struggling Klay Thompson. And then it's post game, like pretty obvious how big a mistake that was, or the Kuminga DNP against Portland where they're struggling. I mean, can you like it, how hard is it to believe now? Like Kuminga was not in the rotation.
It was pretty hard to understand that then.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, like those moments have forced a shift, and you're correct. Like, you know, there's, I think, fair arguments that it should have been happening sooner, but clearly some of this core, this coaching staff, all that kind of had to be pushed to the realization that like the youth is coming up. The vets are kind of being pushed down a little bit. And as they decide what to do with the deadline, as it's probably a quieter deadline and we can talk about the trade deadline a little bit than maybe some had hoped for or even believed, even internally thought it was going to be a month ago. Part of the belief of where growth can come over the last month, and I don't mean growth to suddenly, you know, be beating the Nuggets in the West Finals. I mean growth as far as like they look better going into the offseason, is a belief that there needs to be more youth on the floor. They need to play, like Tim mentioned, a little bit more of a different style to that's more conducive to a Kuminga, even a Moses Moody, who's more of like a 3-and-D stationary type wing. But Moody needs to play. Like, he comes back, and like if Corey Joseph's playing over Moses Moody, you know, that doesn't seem wise. If that
Warriors Twitter would just love that. Yeah. They would really.
Trace Jackson Davis at this point seems to be like he should be getting more backup center minutes than Kevon Looney, and we know Pajemski's going to play. That's one Kerr seems to have zero problem with. So. Part of that's like it's beyond just a stylistic shift. It needs to be a shift towards those four young guys who going into the summer need to be viewed as better assets if they want to make a bigger move, or going into next season need to be firmer, better rotation players.
I love that the league forced this creativity and like flexibility upon the Warriors, because as you mentioned, they were kind of like the Sears Roebuck of the league, where they basically had their formula. It worked. They got customers, people were buying in, people were scoring, they were winning championships.
Explain to me the Sears World
Book. Yeah, that's an old time reference. Yeah, you pulled that one out.
I love it. I need it to be explained. Yeah, Slater's
like, what is this Sears World Book? They're robots that
no, made by Sears? So okay. I shopping. All right, let's take it to shopping.
There you go.
Right. So back in the day when big time malls and or before malls happened, but before like big time business to consumer, like B2C kind of shops were coming through, they would go to Sears Robux and they'd say, I'd like to sell my product in your catalog. And these catalogs would be shipped all over America. And that was how people got anything and everything in their homes. Appliances, Christmas gifts, like whatever you wanted, you got it from the Sears Robux magazine. It was like the staple. And then, other competitors were like a Macy's, right? You think about these very well-known other big time, like mall type places, but they shifted. When Sears Robux was a magazine, they eventually became brick and mortar, but where they did not do well was the third evolution, which was online. And then you saw the JCPenney's, the Macy's, the other distributors find other channels to their consumers, and they succeeded. And that's why you barely ever see Sears's anymore. You might see a brick and mortar, but like they basically ran themselves out of business because they would not adapt. Same concept from a Blockbuster, right? There's just so many different examples of people being like, we're doing this and we've been doing this. You know, Sears was the place for America for decades. And then basically ran themselves into oblivion because they would not adapt with the times. And I feel like the Warriors were on the cusp of doing that by saying we are this, three-point shooting, not even, I want to say run and gun, but like, this is who we are. We run our sets. We have great out of bounds plays and sideline out of bounds plays. And, we're the Splash Bros plus Draymond, and this is who we are. This is our identity, and we've been doing it, and it's great. Great. Good job, Warriors. You have pushed the three-point line out. You have made people have to, space the floor so much better. Well, guess what? Not only has everyone been able to shoot the three better, they've also gotten taller and longer and more athletic. And they have created the online channel that you didn't want to create for so long.
But
and so
I now love I feel Blockbuster. Like Blockbuster's awesome.
Are you using your Blockbuster cards later?
Yes.
Are you using your Blockbuster?
I think there is like one more Blockbuster left. There was like a documentary on like the last.
It's like in Washington or Oregon or something like that. Something
Does this sound like an Ivy League study there, Zeno? Are you throwing some Ivy League stuff
at us? Or like a Michael Lewis book or something?
Yeah. No, it's so true. Slater and I are both thinking, newspaper industry, newspaper failure.
Yeah, there you go.
Neon lights going off in our heads. But that's a good metaphor, Zena.
He's gonna have Blockbuster in his column today.
I might have to. But no, this is like you have to adapt. You do have to change. And they have played this way for a long time. And I think I'm gonna give more stuff from my column, but I think game 7 against Sacramento was kind of there like, hey, see, this stuff still works. We do the same thing with Steph and Draymond. Mm-hmm. We're tough, we're proven. This is how we do it. We beat this younger team with this kind of savvy experience, our scheme, and Steph carries us. You know what? Game 7s just don't last forever. Like that was a great moment. He lost to the Lakers for some of the same fundamental things that we're seeing now. They tried to fix some of it with CP3. We know CP2 was good for them beginning of the season. He's hurt. Maybe he'll be good again. But you can't do the same thing over and over and over again and not think the opponents are going to go, you know what? Maybe we should play this a different way.
You know the other part of this too, that they've struggled with for, I would say now, 4 or 5 seasons. It's adapting to their own personnel beyond just the league. Yep. But, Kelly Oubre came in. We saw him last night. Kelly Oubre's had a couple good seasons.
Yeah. Marcus starts being like, Warriors should trade for Kelly Oubre.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
But he couldn't play within the Warriors system. No. Kent Bazemore.
D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
He was in a weird year. But
I'll give you one big one. James Wiseman was.
What system is James Wiseman?
Fair, but also that was like the absolute worst one that would like send him into a spiral. Like DHOs and Andrew Bogut like trick screens and stuff. Yeah. Like, sorry, but that was, then don't draft.
Although,
him. And, look, this is
I'm going to say they won 2022 championships.
Yes. So for sure. Like, and partly because, you're right. But like, I think they've learned over the, like, you do have to somewhat adapt to personnel, and the 2022 title, like, you know, a jumbo version of this game seven against the Kings you're talking about, made them recommit to who they are. And in times, and honestly, this season, you know, in key moments, they might still kind of try to do that. You know what I mean? Cause it is just who they are at the core, but I think they're at least learning, you know, particularly Kuminga is a great example of all of this. As you mentioned, the change agent, like he is really good, but you have to tailor some of what you do to him. And they've had trouble tailoring what they want to do to young guys or like a free agent type guy or guy you get on trade, like a Kelly Oubre, where they're not good enough to just do it only their own way anymore for various reasons. And again, I believe personnel is one of those reasons.
Sears Roebuck. I'm going to remember this for a long time.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I feel like they've had years of confirmation bias, right? Like they just, this worked. Why not? I want to ask you guys, because I vividly remember the moment for me that made me kind of this season particularly where I was like, oh yeah, there's no excuse anymore for not finding a way for the young guys to be in the mix. And for me, it was when they played Denver and Denver's young guys were killing. And the Warriors young guys were on the bench. And I was like, yeah, there's no excuse for if a Jokic and a Jamal Murray, because remember, they sat Michael Porter Jr. I'm forgetting his name, the one with amazing posture.
Yeah, you're talking about Peyton Watson.
Yes, Peyton Watson, right? They sat him for Peyton Watson, and there was no problem with that, right? Michael Porter Jr. wasn't shooting well. He started the game shooting well, wasn't shooting well. They sat him for Peyton Watson, and he closed out the game. And I was like, yeah, there's literally no excuse. We're seeing a perfect example of the, quote, two timelines play on the Denver team. And that was like the moment for me, because I want to say the OKC, the first OKC game, that they needed to shift because of the youth athleticism, but they were so close in that game.
Yeah, they played that one right? well. Yeah, they played that
They played that well. Game well. So that wasn't it for me. But I wonder, like, did you guys have a moment this season when you looked at it and you were like, yeah, you, there's no excuse?
I think I really narrow in on watching Klay play this season. It's been up and down, we know. It just hasn't been Klay and Kevon Looney. Those just like I just look at that, like, Steve is really loyal to those guys, and he should. We understand why he is. But when you just keep pushing them out there and you keep pushing them out there, and as Steph himself said, not specific to those guys, but Steph did say, it was about a month ago, Slater, like, what's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Like, that was a little bit of a, like, indication that, you know, whether it's the way they play or the exact players they're playing, you can't just keep saying it's going to happen when it's not happening. Specifically for Looney, and God knows, one of the most popular people on this team, one of the nicest guys, thoughtful, caring, has dealt with going in and out of lineup, has dealt with not playing for the first 2 years of his career, has
really helped them survive the Jordan Poole
thing. Helped them survive the Jordan Poole thing.
Oh, that's
just a guy that they all lean. Yeah, the guy they all lean on. Yet it wasn't working. So you just watch this. You're just saying, it's not working. It's really not working. And that thin line between when he's efficient for them and when he's not, it was, that thing was passed over. And Klay too. It's like, you just can't just throw guys out there because you've won with them. At some point, you're not going to win with them. Don't know when that moment exactly is. I think, you know, some of that goes up and down, but that's what I just watching those two players, I think, has been like, and I resist the fact that any younger player is better. Like, you do have to have the right younger player. You do have to have that younger player understand what the moment is and realize it's not just them. It's them blending into everyone, but also taking over at a time. And you can say Kerr took too long with Kuminga and has still taken time with Moody. But maybe, yes, I probably agree with that. But also, you want to earn those minutes. Believe me, Steph and Draymond don't want young guys given minutes. I don't think they were thrilled with Wiseman being given minutes, and I think they were quite relieved when he was traded. Kuminga has earned those minutes, maybe earned them and earned them and earned them and earned them and earned them, and now is finally getting them. But I look at it that way. Just the players who are not performing at their best, and that's sometimes Klay, and sometimes Klay is performing at his best. I don't want to put Klay all the way over there, but you can't just say that's our guy. You can't. At some point, you need to win games, and I think there's been internal discussion about that, and I think we've kind of seen them go over that line, at least with Looney, and then Klay is going to play minutes because he's still good, but maybe in the games when he's not playing so well, they will have other options there.
Yeah, I mean, to your question on like moments, like I think all the young guys have had like flashpoint moments. I think Moody's is in Sacramento. I think I mentioned the Kuminga one, right? The two Kuminga ones, Portland, where he was the DMP to the final 17 minutes, and the Denver one where it also included obviously the report we put out the next day where his frustration was obvious, and then he does play career high minutes like in that back to back the next day. And then talks about, and you know, this has been backed up by people I've talked to in the organization. His and Steve Kerr's relationship is in a much better, more communicative place ever since that moment for him. And if you look at his minutes since that moment, where it was, he only played 19 in that Denver game, including he sat the final 18 and they blew an 18-point lead. And Steph Curry was doubled on the last possession and didn't have anywhere to throw it, whereas last night you saw he got doubled as Kuminga. And then I would say Trayce Jackson-Davis's moment was the Boston game. They beat Boston at home overtime. He blocks Jaylen Brown twice at the rim, and it's like, that's a moment you're like, I don't think Kevon Looney's getting up and tossing that Jaylen Brown dunk attempt back. And that is different than in past seasons where there's been moments this year where you're like, Klay will be on the floor, Looney will be on the floor, Wiggins will be on the floor. And the way they've been struggled at times, you're like, man, Moody'd help more tonight. Kuminga would help more tonight. Mm-hmm. Trayce Jackson-Davis would help more tonight. That's different than it has been. And that is where the shift has come.
And the benefit, once you make that shift, if they stick with it, is it does play out over years now, right? You're not just holding on to something. You're letting something develop. There's risk to it. You know, the young guys can make mistakes. Young guys do make mistakes, but you do have, it's a double hit. Maybe you're better for now. And I think we all agree they are better for now with the younger guys getting a bigger role, and they're probably going to get better and they're not getting worse. And I think that's kind of what the fan base has felt, and it's kind of, maybe it's what, you know, many in the organization have felt. Now, you don't want to lose Looney, and you don't want to, have a lot of this, the principles, a lot of the belief system kind of burn away, but you do have to play the best players. And if it's even close, maybe you lean to the future. Are they going to win a championship this season? I don't think they are. So if they're probably their best lineup, and it's going to be definitely their best lineup next season, you might as well go with it and see where it plays out.
Yeah. And Looney, look, Draymond gets two fouls in the first 2 minutes last night. Looney comes in and takes a shift on Joel Embiid. If they played the Kings in the first round, Looney's going to get some time on Sabonis. He defends Sabonis well. We've seen that. There will be
Sabonis' head. Mm-hmm.
There's some Kings fans who listen to this podcast.
Yeah, that was Zena saying that.
He's got an apartment living in Sabonis. No, I'm joking.
By the way, Sabonis, if he doesn't make the All-Star team on Thursday, there's going to be some Sacramento fans. I mean, if Looney's here past the deadline, and that it, I'm curious what the Warriors end up do at the deadline, because I do think there's kind of a shift towards prioritizing the youth. If y'all want, we can get into that.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying, I wrote that I expected them to trade Wiggins. This is like a couple of weeks ago, and I think that was kind of the mindset. Maybe less than, as you wrote, like they're kind of in this place where, like, do they trade them? I mean, like, are they going to get better if they trade Wiggins? Do they have to get off
the
that
other
money,
thing is, you know? He's now part of their best starting and closing five.
There you go.
Yeah. And they're like, so like, yeah, okay. Right. Let's say you moved him for like theoretically Bogdanovich in Detroit, who like, he would really juice the offense. He's a good player on a reasonable deal that expires sooner, which is important for the Warriors. But is he like playing better than Andrew Wiggins has played the last month? Not necessarily. Wiggins is helping. Wiggins could be traded in the summer. It's not a commitment to Wiggins necessarily long term, but I'm not sure Wiggins is getting you better production than what he's currently giving you, because his contract's not viewed that great right now.
And also, when we talk over and over, Pascal Siakam, as that would be a difference maker. And we can understand putting some players together in a package to get him, because you could feasibly, okay, could they take on the Suns if they got Steph, Siakam, and Draymond? Yeah, I mean, I could see that. They didn't get him. You know, they didn't have enough to get him, understandably. I don't know that other player is. Again, we've gone Zach LaVine. No, I mean, like, we've gone through these players, and I don't know who makes him better than having just keeping Wiggins and playing it out with him. And so even though I'm the person who said I think they're trading him, I think at this point they probably aren't. We'll see. I was joking with somebody, non-Warriors person. I don't want anyone to aggregate this, but like, when Buster Posey came out for the Giants, Bochy had Benji Molina and was not going to have Buster Posey play catcher. Just wasn't going to do it as long as he had Molina. So what do the Giants do? They trade a Molina so Buster Posey can play catcher. Could that be the same case with Kevon Looney? You just trade him to make sure. Oh, I think I had the conversation with you, Slater. Okay, yeah. I can't name the person I was talking to. Yeah, it was you. Like, I thought it was actually a Warriors person. It was Slater. Do you trade Kevon Looney just to make sure that Kerr doesn't play? And I was joking about that. Looney's too important a part of this fundamental core, but
if
he's moved, but that might be part of the thinking.
If there is an obtainable center that they desire out there, I could see Looney being part of the deal, because Looney is, he has making $8 million next year, but only $3 million is guaranteed. So that's valuable enough to a rebuilding team that likes expiring deals. You know, Wendell Carter, I know there's at least been, you know, interest, and Nick Claxton is like an expiring contract in Brooklyn.
I really like Nick Claxton.
His potential availability. Nick Capella in Atlanta, that's a bigger deal. That's a little tougher to do. Yeah. But, you know, I could see Looney being, you know, as they shift, Looney being a, you know, part of a package there or not. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, that could happen. What you're mentioning. The thing, and, you know, but you're mentioning the whole Molina Posey comparison. I think part of the reason we both felt, and there was a sense that Wiggins might just have to be moved, is because there was a 2-month stretch where it was like him and Kuminga cannot play together. Yeah. The head coach was coming on the podium saying, I can't play them together. I've tried. It's horrible. They were like -170.
Have you looked at the numbers? Yeah. And the numbers were terrible.
And it was like, that was part of why Kuminga was getting far fewer minutes than we all thought he should get, because it was like, well, they're still trying to play Wiggins. So there was a sense of like, maybe they just need to get off Wiggins so they can just give Kuminga the job. Well, suddenly with Draymond Green back, Wiggins is not blocking Kuminga. They're playing well together. So that, to me, has changed the equation of like, they're not forced to trade Wiggins, because he's suddenly not blocking the young guy behind him in the rotation.
Yep.
And look at how important Draymond is as a key.
Oh God,
yeah. Blocking that. Like, that's crazy to think that Jonathan Kuminga's minutes were directly impacted by Wiggins' ability to produce, and then indirectly impacted by Draymond's suspensions and not being able to be on the floor with them at the same time to unlock that. Ooh, as a young player, that's so frustrating to know you're capable of doing all the things and then being like, I'm doing the things, I just can't be on the floor because the right combination isn't out there for me. But I mean, played through that well. He's played through that well.
Kuminga has some rightful frustrations for how he has been handled the last season and a half. Once middle of last season, his second season, he really emerged because Wiggins left the team for a while. And Kuminga was a big part of the rotation. The final stretch got them to the sixth seed, part of who got them to the sixth seed. Mm-hmm. And then was out of the rotation right when Wiggins and Gary Payton came back before the playoffs. And I've thought for a while he's been ready to play 30 minutes a night. And, you know, I think some of the way they handled him have handled him has really sharpened his game. He makes extra passes and small stuff that you know, you're not seeing Jalen Green in Houston do, or, you know, guys like that, because they haven't played that way. They haven't been forced to make all these winning type plays over their first 3 years. So I do think Kuminga probably over the long term is a better player because of this. But I also have been very understanding of some of the frustrations that have boiled within him, and a belief that, hey, if it's not going to be 30 minutes every night here, make it somewhere that's not here, because it needs to be 30 minutes a night, because he's extension eligible this summer and he's ready. Clearly. I mean, he is like one of the best paint players in the league over the last month. It's like Zion and, you know, Giannis, like that's where he is in paint points right now.
And also he's one of the best fast break players. that they've had, you know, in how many years? I mean, it's gonna be a fast paced team. They're like, yeah, but they don't have guys who finish. You know, he gets the ball and there's a guy in front of him. It doesn't matter if he's in open court, he's going to score at least get fouled. He had that one in the half court. He had that one challenge on Embiid. And I said, did you know Embiid was going to be there? Because it looked like he took a dribble in there, went, oh, there's Embiid here. Let me lean back a little bit and try to shoot it really high. And he said, yeah, if Embiid had not been ready, it would have been fine. Because you can try to beat him to the shot. But when Embiid is ready, he probably should not have done that. I still can get him. Of course, he's Jonathan. Like, he still believes in himself. But that is a massive man there. He does adjust some things. So, yeah, maybe you pass at that situation. And again, this is Jonathan's, you know, development, his maturity. He can talk about these things and understanding that this situation happened and another situation was like this, and then I can do this. These are not some things I think that were constantly on his mind in the past. They're in his mind now, but he's feeling confident. He's feeling good about it. That just let him take off and throw it to him if he's down court, no matter what. That's 6 points a game, right? 8 points a game that they were not getting, or otherwise
been about 18 points a game lately.
Well, specific situation, throw it ahead. I don't care if there's a guy in front of him; he's going to get to the rim because it's in open court. This is 3 points, and they give up 3 points sometimes. They've got to get some back, and that's one of them. And they just haven't been, you know, Wiggins maybe did a few of it when he was really playing well, certainly hasn't done a lot of that recently.
2022 playoffs.
It's 3 points, and they don't have enough of that. This is just let it go. It's taken a while to get to this point. He's going to have clunkers, folks. He's going to have clunkers, but that's okay because the good stuff outweighs it. My question would be on Wiggins, and I get all this. I've said it. I think, you know, he's more valuable to them. But what if you talked about he's not blocking Kuminga anymore. What if you feel like he's blocking Moody? Like, what if Moody starts really playing?
To me, that's more of a Clay conversation.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess. But Clay's playing, folks. I mean, Clay is going to play.
Yeah, but he's on an expiring deal. And
yeah, you're right.
Not,
it's a good question.
His future's uncertain. And I've had people say, like, you know, okay, Clay doesn't have to play 35 minutes every game. Yep. If Clay's playing well, he can play 35 minutes. But if Clay, I think we know a lot of times early on with Clay Thompson in games, like that can be throttled back to a 24-minute game. He got benched down the stretch in Phoenix. Yes, you know what I mean?
Yes, he did. Yeah, it's a good point. I just, like, there are wing minutes available if they're more lenient on thinking that way than they've been in the past.
The thing about Clay, though, You got to be careful. I mean, the other day against Lakers, he had 2 points going into the second half, but then he hit key threes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're always going to play him.
They're always,
They're not going to play him 15 minutes. They're going to play him 24 minimum, and then sometimes that's going to be 36. But I do think they have to be much more flexible about that than they've been in the past. And yeah, Moody is the one. I mean, once CP is back, like there's going to be...
The Chris Paul question is interesting because, like, he can own those second unit minutes, which, by the way, like last night they're minus 11 with that lineup we were talking about earlier, brutal, the Joseph, Quiñones. And Chris Paul is like plus 27 without Steph Curry on the floor this year. Like, especially early in the season, was like, man, he's like stabilized their weakest part of the game. So there is a lot of value to bringing him back on the court for those minutes. But Chris Paul doesn't want to play 12 non-Steph Curry minutes and then be fine. He wants to close games. They've said he's going to be a closer, and then suddenly, like, they currently have a closing lineup that doesn't include him. So that might be tricky. And then that's a question heading towards the deadline. $30 million expiring deal. Add a pick to him. You could get some value for now and the future potentially. But at the same time, he's a maneuverable contract in the offseason, and he's also your way out of the second apron, maybe, depending on what happens with Clay this summer. So I think that's a question mark.
It's a question mark. He's really liked in that locker room, right? This has not been like, we throw a guy in there and, you know, whatever. Like, they like him.
He's like a new age Andre for them. Like, second voice, like on the bench, encouraging them. That is a really great question. I also want to talk about, just to go back to your point about Jonathan Kuminga and being, you know, a downhill player. Yesterday, I actually thought it was quite scary seeing in transition Andrew Wiggins on one wing and Jonathan Kuminga on the other wing. Like that combination, especially the way they were attacking the basket, was actually, to me, quite scary. But Slater, you're saying that you're not seeing that as much out of him just yet, or?
Who, Kuminga or Wiggins?
Wiggins.
Yeah, I mean, he's
just like downhill.
They were in the Lakers game. Like D'Angelo Russell was on him. There was a few guys, and like there was a few times Steph Curry had to throw him the ball and be like, look who's on you.
Yeah, okay.
Go.
Yeah, okay. There's some times, I'm not going to lie, there's some times that Steph Curry has, I've caught him do it once, where Steph Curry has thrown the ball to Wiggins and he's just been like, oh, wait, I'm in the NBA. I'm playing this game too.
Shoot, attack, score, right. post up the 6'4" guy who has zero interest of showing any resistance.
Hey, I loved how much he was posting up last night. I think last night was the first time all season that I have seen Andrew Wiggins calling for the post like he was a senior going up against a freshman in high school. Like, are you kidding me? Give me
the.
Yeah, he had some great matchups and he was like, hungry for them, though.
This is
the that's the difference.
The year he made the All-Star team, and he was the same year they won the title, that he was awesome in the playoffs. It's like he was doing a lot of that, and like, yeah, he has been that for five games or so, even with some goading. Like I said, the Lakers game was only, you know, two games ago, and there was a lot of like, come on, like, do it. So that, you know, the vision, you're correct. Like, theoretically, like, 2 6'7", 6'8" wings, like, with the ability they have. Yeah. And, but Kuminga, to me, especially at this stage of his career and just like who he naturally is as a attacker on the basketball court, has that in him. Like, that's just like, you know,
you're not begging him to go get to the rim. He's like, that's what it's for. Like, let me get to the rim.
As you said, confidence.
Yeah, he volunteered it. Like, he wants to start hitting that 3-point shot regularly, and we know it's been a struggle for him this season, but we know he's capable of it. I think he made one last night, a couple popped out. Can you imagine? Not that he should be looking for the three. He should not. He should be looking for the drive, as Draymond said. Like, no one can stop you now. You know, sometimes you can, but if he has that in his game where he can hit the open three and defenses have to acknowledge that, there's going to be some really dangerous nights. Even you, there's a 40-point night coming for Jonathan Kuminga.
Kuminga, the spacer.
Yeah, ooh. I mean, or just like, so they have to deal with it. Like, they don't deal with it. They give him the shot.
Yeah,
I would too. Like, you know, what is he shooting? 26% from three, whatever it is.
Is it that low? I mean, he's had
It was low for a while. It might be a little higher than that now, but it's not 36 or anything.
One thing it doesn't do is it doesn't scare defense. It's 32.4%.
Oh, they let him. Year. They let him shoot
37%.
So if it's there, his feet are set. You know, look what Draymond's done with his three this season. I said, like, Draymond. Yes. I think Draymond's their third best 3-point shooter. Like, percentage, whatever. Like, he just is. When he's shooting the ball, I feel only more confident it's going in when Klay's shooting it and with Steph shooting it. That's it among Warriors players. And that's a large step for him, and it's an important step. And if
Moses Moody can't get in that conversation.
I'm sorry, he's not active. My problem.
Pajemski can't get in that conversation?
No, Pajemski is not in that conversation. He is not.
Pajemski's shooting 39%.
Yeah, I do not.
Guess who leads the Warriors in 3-point percentage?
Moses Moody.
Draymond Green.
Draymond Green.
There you go. Yeah. So he's your best 3-point shooter. There he is.
Guess who is second in 3-point percentage?
Dario Saric.
Dario Saric. Oh,
wow. He's who has not been hitting them lately.
41.2. You
know, it goes up and down. And it gets random. So what's Steph at? Like 38?
40.9.
Yeah.
Right anytime, below them.
Yeah. Anytime Steph's
that's amazing,
not,
though.
Not
degree of difficulty
the 42,
on the Steph
40.
Curry shots, slightly.
Slightly.
More
and the volume.
Right. And volume. I was going to say volume.
Volume and difficulty. Yeah. I think I would still take Steph Curry lining one up over
anyone on this. But can you imagine if Kuminga is a 36% 3-point shooter? Like, there is that would be really, really.
You're talking about an all-star, is what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Which
theoretically, and Slater, you mentioned like that second. Yeah. Is he that second guy? He isn't right now, but we can see it.
Is it conceivable? Yes.
Absolutely. I mean,
he took more shots than Steph last night.
Yep.
Which I was like,
you want to know what's crazy? Is Steve Kerr's like, yeah, that's okay. You know,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh man, you guys are right. Like, this is my lead. This is my lead for my column.
Okay. All right. Well, we're 50 minutes deep into a podcast, so don't worry. Number one, Tim, I'll get us out of here and I'll finish us on the last subject. What did y'all think of this like Niners party
it was very interesting. These two teams like each other. We know that. Joe Lacob is a big time suite holder at 49ers games. You know, there is a kind of a convivial out, you know, these guys, the leadership.
You get free tickets, I get free tickets.
Exactly.
Right?
And they like each other at each other's games. They like it. They like that conversation. Debo said something to Steph before a fourth quarter playing. Steph hits a three, runs down points right at Debo. I asked him, he goes, yeah, Debo said something not very positive about Steph. As
you ain't hitting that.
Yeah, a B block. He wasn't saying that. But yeah. Steph made sure to point to Debo. They were lining up that first row. They like each other. And again, there's similar principles, I think. There's similar mindset.
What do you think, Tim? What do you think about it was like the Bridge Club suite seemed to be like rented out. I saw the video. They had like a cake, like a specific Niners
Joe
cake.
Gave a speech. Joseph 49er fan.
I saw Kittle at the bar like way after the game last night, still in the Bridge Club in his Looney jersey, like I'm sure crushing Coors Lights or whatever he was.
Oh, I'm sure they're keeping very focused for the Super Bowl. Let's make point.
Extra week help.
Yeah, it's a good scene. The 49ers are welcome there. And Warriors are, Clay, we know Clay loves the, you know, he gets down 400 games a ton. It's just like two franchises that like each other. And I think they like liking each other. They like that the other team likes them. It's just one of those things. Kerr.
Sounds like a high school, like sophomore, like romance novel. Like
it's a bromance. It's a bromance for sure.
I was thinking more like the high school basketball team showing up for the football team and the high school football team showing up for the basketball team. That's the way I look at it. And they just think they're similar personalities. Kerr and John Lynch are pretty close. It's just like similar mindsets. And I think I've written like good teams like other good teams. They like hanging with each other. It's good vibes. 49ers are in the Super Bowl and the Warriors aren't that great, but you know, obviously the Warriors have won way more titles recently. It's a scene and they like that. It's a scene both ways. So that's how I would play it out. They're just similar vibes with both, and it's good to share.
All right, y'all, our trade has worked.
That's a good trade. Yeah. We got better instantly. Instantly, we got better.
You guys are silly. I think you guys are so silly.
I'm sure we could get Marcus back. And
Marcus is going to have a
team.
Full press conference about this, by the way.
His agent.
Like, I know
his
what
agent,
my team.
We'll
right,
get a release.
Show up.
No, he's just going to leak.
Shams is going to tweet something out about.
Yeah, he's going to leak. He's going to leak something about his like Tim Kawakami's usage rate. And I don't know. Who knows? But all right, y'all.
Great, Zena. You're great.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, y'all. Appreciate it.
We will talk to y'all later.
See ya.